Hi there, I'm Brian Carpenter at Brian Carr on Twitter. I'm a teacher at a blended and online school here in Abbotsford, British Columbia, and I am a member of the EdTech Army.
Welcome to the Sons of Technology Clubhouse. Ditch your fear at the door, take a risk, and enjoy the ride with your hosts, Joe Marquez and Kyle Anderson.
Welcome, everybody, to another fantastic episode of the podcast by the Sons of Technology. Today, we have an episode that people have been asking for a while, and that is, hey, can you talk about the various video formats that are out there for educators? Because there's so many of them. And, you know, so we're going to dive into the different platforms, the different uses, the different features of all of these tools so that you can make the best choice for your activities with your students or for yourself as an educator to create tutorials or videos for friends, family, and students as well. But first, let's get started with introductions. My name is Joe Marquez. I am an educator out of the Central Valley of California, and I am currently the Director of Academic Innovation for Q. And you can find me in the Twitters at JoeMarquez70. And as always, my partner in innovation, Kyle Anderson. Kyle, please introduce yourself.
Hello, once again, Kyle Anderson, a special education teacher from Las Vegas, Nevada. You can find me on Twitter at AndersonEdTech, same thing for the Instagram, and then my blog, AndersonEdTech.net. And then I also have a book called To the Edge, Successes and Failures Through Risk-Taking. You can find it on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, and then also through my publisher, EduMatch Publishing. So, and Joe, this, like you said, this is an episode a few people have asked about, a lot of questions about different like screencasting, video creation tools, whatever. And we've talked about a lot of these things on episodes individually before, but we've never dedicated an episode wholly to these kinds of tools. So this should be a good time talking about these different things.
No, yeah. And the conversation really spurred from one of our last episodes where we mentioned that Loom, when you install the Loom extension, it automatically puts a Loom button in your Gmail so that you can send quick, easy video tutorials or messages to anybody at any time without any extra effort. And people are like, oh, I didn't even know that. And we're like, man, we really need to kind of dive into these different tools. Because Kyle, I've been a Screencastify guy for a long time. And I heard people talking about this Loom for the longest time. And the only reason I even investigated it was because I'm like, I should know it. Right. If there's so many people talking about it, I should know it. I should know the ins and outs of it. But it was just a happy circumstance that I was installed the Loom, played with it a little bit, was going to send an email and saw that button. I'm like, oh, that's a game changer, especially during this time of distance or hybrid that we find ourselves in. But that really went down kind of the rabbit hole of, but wait. There's more. There's so many different video platforms that are out there or different platforms that are out there that can incorporate video that we really need to talk about. And so that's kind of where this idea spurred from. So Kyle, I want to punt it to you first. When you think of video platforms, when you think of video creation, whether it's teacher side or student side, what's one of the first things that you think about?
First one that I think of is the one that I use for video production. I use it for audio production. I use it for all sorts of different things. And that's Camtasia from TechSmith. So you may be familiar with this program or other programs that are out there made by the same company. So Snagit is another one that is a screen shot program. There's also a free one that is web-based called Jing, J-I-N-G, that a few people that I know of use and whatever, but Camtasia is basically like the Cadillac of video production tools that's within a reasonable price range still. So there are definitely better programs out there that you can sink some money into, but if you're willing to spend a little bit of money, Camtasia is a really, really great program. And this is one that I've been using for quite a few years now. So I was fortunate. I actually received a license for both Camtasia and for Snagit as a gift for presenting at a Google Summit a few years ago. And with that, not only did I get the license for the full program, not just the 30-day trial and then pay for it afterward, but I also get anytime a new version comes out, usually TechSmith will release a new version every year. So I just got Camtasia 2021 here in the last few days. And then anytime that there's updates where patches and bug fixes come through, you get all those for free. So I'm fortunate in that. So typically you have to pay for an educator license, $169 for it. And then I believe it's $30, maybe even $50 a year in order to upgrade to the next version. So I'm not having to pay for that. So, but with this program, not only can you record in it, you can edit in the program, you can add audio effects in there. So when we're doing this podcast, if we have a lot of background noise, I can go in and filter out a lot of that background noise using the effects in there. You can add animations, you can add speech bubbles and other things, visuals within a video or audio.
Well, you know, I think our one of our really good friends and fellow EdTech Army member, Jake Miller, I believe he uses Camtasia to make all of his edu-GIFs that he is famously known for, because you can export in GIF format. And I know you can bring in all those animations. That's how he gets all those great tips along the way. And Kyle, when you were talking about, you know, you earned this lifetime membership to Camtasia by presenting at a Google Summit a few years ago. I remember when TechSmith partnered with the Google Innovator Academy, and being a part of that Google Innovator Academy, you would get the updates as well. But they ended that back in 2018. So guess what last version I still use of Camtasia? Yes, Camtasia 2018, just because they stopped partnering with the Google Innovator program. But I know you do a lot of videos off of Camtasia. I know all of the Sons of Technology YouTube videos are produced via Camtasia. But what else do you use Camtasia for in the classroom, beyond?
So like I said, I mean, this podcast, I edit this podcast in it. I edit the Beer EDU podcast in it. I edit the Battleborn Digital Learning podcast in Camtasia. So all of those things are there. And then while the Beer EDU podcast is the only one where I'm taking the podcast audio and then posting it to YouTube, I'm doing the videos for those in there as well. So what's really nice is that in Camtasia, if you don't have video, you have audio only, you can lay an image in there and then stretch it out over the audio to where it then now looks like video. So that's how I upload for the Beer EDU podcast into YouTube. So it's basically a static image of our episode promo. So for, say, our most recent episode, episode 101, I have the image in there of the Bitmojis of Ben and I, cheers in our beers. And then we always get permission from the guests to take their Twitter profile picture and to make a promotional card for it. And that ends up becoming the image. And then what I do is, because it's connected to my personal email account, I don't go directly into YouTube from there and share it to YouTube. What I do is I download it as a file and then I upload to YouTube on our Beer EDU channel account. So, but if you have a personal YouTube account, or if you're using this as a school account, you got a YouTube account for that, you don't even have to download the file. You can actually upload directly into YouTube. And there's some other programs that you can upload it into as well. I believe Vimeo might be one of them as well. So you, there's steps you don't have to take if you want to produce the video and then just publish it right away. Or like I do with a lot of videos, I just download them and then I have them on either the hard drive of the computer or an external hard drive, or I keep everything. So, but the editing tools that are in there are absolutely phenomenal. So, and I mean, I used another program years ago, iMovie, that a lot of people are familiar with, but iMovie, while good, just it doesn't have the tools that Camtasia does. And it's that price point. iMovie is free on an Apple device, whereas Camtasia, again, has that $169 educator price and then the annual upgrade fee. So it may be a bit too steep in price for some people, but for those that want a few more options than something that a free program can give, I can't say enough good stuff about Camtasia.
Yeah, no, I agree. Camtasia is a great program. TechSmith is a great company. I used to use Snagit all the time when they had the Google extension available for Snagit. I don't know why they took that away. You know how I love my extensions. So I stopped using it quite a bit. But Camtasia is a great, great product. Now, those of you who are listening, and you're like, oh, $169, even for an educational price, that's a lot. How can I use that in my classroom or amplify it for my students? That's a difficult question. But WeVideo is a great option for the classroom, for your students, even for yourself. It may not have the depth of what Camtasia can do, but WeVideo is an all online platform, which means you don't have to have an on-prem downloaded installed program for it. And because it is a cloud platform, you can save anything on one computer, log back into your account on another computer, and everything is there. And they even have a collaborative portion as well. So you can have two or three or four students, even at a distance. Can you imagine us talking about working on projects at a distance? Even at a distance, you can have people working on the same project in the same file at the same time, adding their things into it. So a great way to collaboratively create audio and video at a moment's notice. And yes, it does green screen. It does all those cool things. You can find WeVideo on Twitter and see all their amazing tutorials on YouTube. So if you are looking for a video creation platform that has the depth of green screen, the depth of editing, the depth of adding in animations, those kinds of things, but you can't see yourself buying 30 licenses for your students, WeVideo is a great option for that.
Now, I've toyed around WeVideo a little bit over the years. And in fact, the first time I applied for a Google Certified Trainer, I made my video in WeVideo. Now, back then, this has been a couple of years now, there was a free version that allowed you to do some basic video editing in there. But if you wanted to go beyond and do some more advanced things, and then there was a really obnoxious watermark that was on the free version that was placed on your videos. To get rid of that, you had to upgrade and have a paid version of it. Is that still the case?
You know, that's a very good question. I don't know if that's still the case. I was using a pay version of WeVideo up until the end of myself using it a while back when I was in the classroom. So I don't know if they still have that watermark. What I think they might have done is gotten rid of the watermark, but limited the amount of length of the video, like to 5 minutes, kind of like what, you know, Screencastify and Loom do. But you know, that's a good thing. I mean, that's a good thing to point out, is that you do have a lot of these products that allow you to have a free version of them, but there's limits to that. Whether there's limits in putting your branding on it, there's limits because they put their branding on it, right? So you have to weigh the pros and the cons. Like in the classroom, if you're using the free version of WeVideo, which limits the video to 5 minutes. And by the way, people, you don't want students to make anything over that, because that's going to be a lot of watching you have to do. But if that watermark is like a deal breaker for you, then you look for something else. But for myself, the videos being produced are for us as a class. I was perfectly fine if we needed to do a watermark. But again, you know, to each their own, you have to think about, okay, in the free version, I'm forced to have a WeVideo watermark. Is that okay? If not, I'm going to go to my IT or my admin and say, hey, this is a product we need. And can we look into purchasing a couple licenses for our class?
So I just pulled up the website to look, and there's individual and business plans, and then there's also education plans here. So with the individual plan, if you were just to get one, you could do the free version, but there's the $4.99 a month version, which that's if you buy it at the annual price. So if you pay up front $60 for the year, you can publish 30 minutes a month from the program. You get 20 gigs of storage, and you do have that watermark. But if you upgrade and spend $8 a month, For the full year instead of the $16 a month if you do it annually. Then you have unlimited publish time, unlimited storage. You don't have that watermark. And then it goes up from there. So, I mean, you can really get into it where on a business plan at $37 a month or $74 if you paid for it monthly, then you really get into some things. So, but there's also with the teacher one, it's $89 a year for yourself. You've also got a classroom for up to 30 individuals. It's $299 for the year, which that works out to $10 a person, which is pretty good. And then you can go into school and district pricing where you can request some information on it. So, and I remember looking into it for schools in the past when I was a tech coach, and the amount of money it was going to cost to get the number of licenses we need was cost prohibitive. So we didn't end up going with it. But I've heard where what you do is as a classroom teacher, you get a license for 30 seats, and then you can assign those out to students, but you can do multiple students per license. I can't remember exactly how that works, but it ends up working out to where you don't have to, if you've got 250 kids, you don't have to get 250 licenses. You can still just get that 30, and then everybody can still use the licenses, but there's just a way to do that. And I can't remember exactly how that was.
Yeah, you know, what I did was I had our Google admin, which was me, create a account called Student 1, Student 2, Student 3, and I assigned the Wii Video license to each of those. And every class, I'd say, okay, you're going to sign in with this one, you're going to sign in with that one, and they kept that one always. And so I would just have to make sure, don't mess with other people's projects. No, because you'd be logging in and somebody else's, and it seemed to work well, right? So that way I was able to get 180 students in with 30 licenses. Now, I'm sorry, Wii Video, if you're listening to this, you're like, oh, you shouldn't be doing that. Sorry, as a teacher, you got to do what you got to do when you don't have a district or school license. But it worked out well, right? So, you know, again, you have to think to yourself, what do I want my students to create? What are some features that I absolutely need? And if editing really isn't one of those features, you don't need Camtasia or Wii Video. If all you want is to get quick information, quick videos, quick screencasts from students, there's a plethora. I love that word. Lots of different video platforms that are out there. Now let's get this one out of the way, Kyle, because everybody's like, come on. We're waiting for you to say this, the video platform that everybody's talking about, right? Flipgrid, right? Flipgrid is a great, great product. It is free, right? When Microsoft purchased them, they got rid of any pay tier. It's 100% free. It allows you to do video, screen recording. It does allow you to trim the beginning or an end because those are the most likely places that there are flubs. It allows you to record multiple video segments. So if you do want to record a thing, stop, then record a thing and then stop, you can do that. So there's lots of different ways that you can create segmented videos off of the same creation file. So you can do that. You could bring in images, overlays. If you know me, I love my grid masks. You can create an overlay, kind of like this Ditch That Fear overlay that we have here on StreamYard. You can create your own little masks or frame overlays in Flipgrid. Just look up hashtag grid masks and you can see all the different ways that you can do that. You can create a whiteboard. There's so many things you can do in Flipgrid, right? There's even a Flipgrid Shorts for educators. Like if you want to create videos up to 10 minutes actually. You can do screen recorded videos. You can do face-to-face videos. You can send the links out to people. You can do all of that off of Flipgrid. Now, editing after the fact, not possible. You have to edit during, right? And the way that I think of Flipgrid versus like Camtasia or another program is like Flipgrid is like the original Nintendo. It's great. It's amazing. But as soon as you turn it off, you know, you can't save. Like you can't go back to where you were. If you want to finish the game, you got to play the whole time and go through all 8 levels of Mario and save that princess if you want to win the game. So in Flipgrid, you got to do everything. You got to create your segments. You got to trim. You got to bring. You got to do. You can do all of that in the moment. And when you finally hit publish, you get what you get. Whereas in Camtasia, you can save, go back, make changes, save, go back, make changes. So again, you just have to decide, what do I want? If you want one and done quick shots, Flipgrid is the way to go, right? And so you have to decide, but it's free. But then you have the pay versions like Camtasia and WeVideo. So again, as a teacher, you got to weigh the pros and cons. You got to do, I'm going to do an admin term. You got to do your plus deltas on what you want and what you need and go forward from there, right? What about you, Kyle? What are your thoughts on Flipgrid?
I've used Flipgrid for a few years. I haven't used it as much this year. Just the co-teachers that I work with, a couple of them, just they're not as tech savvy. And then with another co-teacher, we're doing so many other things that it's just not something that we've really built in yet. But I'm looking forward to trying to do something with it more next year, along with Adobe Spark, which we'll get into more here in a moment. Adobe Spark's another great program. But in the past, I've used Flipgrid quite extensively. And then when we went to remote learning last year, when I was still in Northern Nevada, one thing that I was doing was every day in Google Classroom, I would, using the announcements feature in Google Classroom, I would go in and write out a quick blurb about, hey, this is what you need to have done for the day. Make sure you're checking in for attendance. Here's your assignments for the week. Let's make sure that we're working on those. And then just check in to tell us how you're doing. And what I would do is two things. One, I would basically do a Flipgrid short video of the same exact thing that I was writing out, record it, and then add the link to where if a kid wanted to watch it rather than read about it, they could do that. So that was one thing. The other thing I was doing was that because attendance was a little bit different, and then also because we had absolutely no connection with kids physically because we were not in classrooms, was I created a topic every week that served as attendance, but also just as a social emotional check-in kind of deal where, you know, just go on and say hello and how you doing and what's something going on or whatever. And, you know, I've mentioned this a couple times on the podcast where I had a student last year that she would come on and tell us how she was doing. And she goes, check out what I learned to do today. And she would tie us balloon animals. So showing us these different balloon animals. So it was just a really cool way for kids to just check in with us and do their attendance in a way that just wasn't like a quick email or a Google form, which there's nothing against those things. But some kids really just needed more of that, like seeing people kind of connection. So, and Flipgrid was a great way to do that. So now I mentioned Adobe Spark a little bit as well. And that's a program that I feel that it's popular enough that a lot of people know about it, but it's not so popular that the world is just knocking down doors to get to it like Flipgrid. Do you agree?
I do. I know I do. 100%. Like, I mean, there's complete Flipgrid mania that I see happening, right? And it's just great marketing on their point. They have a fantastic community. Ann Cosma is an amazing individual who's a part of Flipgrid that is doing amazing things, bringing the community together. Adam, quote, short shorts is doing the same thing, right? And so it's just a lot of buzz around Flipgrid. So I agree. I still use it every day. I do for, you know, even though I'm not in the classroom anymore, I still use it every day just because I think it's a really great, a great tool for what it does.
Yeah, with Adobe Spark, you've got, there's actually three different things you can do with it. There's Spark Post, which is where you can create images and you can create those images in the form of like Instagram posts or Twitter, Facebook, whatever. So social media style posts. And then so almost like a Canva. It's like a simpler version of Canva where you can create different images. And then there's Spark Page where you can create simple websites and projects within Adobe Spark. That's really cool as well. But then there's Adobe Video where you can go in and create from templates videos that are just really cool. So that I mean, that's, I know that sounds really simplistic, but you get these templates with backgrounds and there's music, royalty-free music you can choose from. There's dozens of things that you can choose from with that. And then you can add images and you can add video clips into them and create these cool little videos in it. And it's something that I haven't really done much in the classroom. I've done it more for myself, whether it's I don't use the Spark page much, but I use the Spark video and the Spark post often enough. And then a while back, I actually had the opportunity. I participated in a training that was put on by Adobe for Education called the Adobe Creative Educator Program, where we basically went through and learned about how to use Adobe Spark and all the different tools within it. And then our assignments for it were to create different things like a page, a post, and a video. And then we submitted those along with, like, you know, testimonials about how we were going to use this in the classroom. And I felt kind of hypocritical at the time because I'm like, I'm not really using this in the classroom. In fact, I'm not using it in the classroom right now. But what it did was it got my wheels turning about next year. And I actually was not on a Twitter chat. I just responded to a message on a Twitter chat in the last few days about something I wanted to try coming up. And I want to take Adobe Spark Video and Flipgrid and then start using them to have students demonstrate learning on math equations. Instead of just saying, like, here's this Google slide, you know, type in the responses or click and drag the things around to show that you know how to do these equations. I want to be able to use video where the students are doing it more on their own and creating it versus just doing it on a Google Doc or a Google slide presentation or something along those lines. So, and I tagged Adobe on it and they actually responded and say, hey, that's a really great idea. Let us know how it goes. So now I feel obligated next fall to have students create Adobe Spark videos with it.
No, I agree. And I think one of the things about Adobe Spark is the word Adobe that might, you know, push people back a little bit, right? I mean, if you've ever tried using Adobe After Effects, that is a beast of a program. If you've gone beyond just Adobe Acrobat and doing PDFs, there's a lot of stuff and a lot of technical skill you need to know to do Adobe things. And there's also that thing that's going on right now that Adobe changed the way that they are working with schools in their licensing. And so you're no longer like buying a program, you're buying a license. There's a lot of stuff going on with the word Adobe. But Adobe Spark doesn't really cost anything, right, Kyle? Adobe Spark is like a creation platform. It's free. Students can use it. Teachers can use it, right?
Right. Yeah, it's free. I believe there used to be a paid version for it, but now it's all free. And now there's different education plans where if districts sign up for it, that not only is it free, but then you can do single sign-on that connects to Google or Microsoft accounts and whatnot. And then I know there used to be a concern with students ages 12 and under being able to use it. But I believe a lot of the privacy concerns regarding that have been ironed out over the last couple of years as well. So now it's definitely something that, like I said, Flipgrid gets a lot of attention, like they should, but Adobe Spark is another one that should get a lot of attention, but I just don't feel gets the love that it deserves. So, and you know, and maybe it's because partly because educators like myself that love it, we're just not putting things out there as much as we should with it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is really about that grassroots, that building the community at the ground level. And I know there's a lot of great Adobe educators out there. But yeah, I mean, I've used it a couple times. I think it's a great tool. You brought up the word Canva, right? It's like that creation tool. You can create infographics, you can create videos. So it's a really great versatile tool that teachers and students should use. So if you're listening to this, listeners, if you're listening to this podcast right now and you're like, you know, I haven't really dived into Adobe Spark, that's the reason. Dive in, right? And I know, like, once summer's here, you're like, oh, I just want to debrief myself. I don't even want to deal with anything. Maybe take some time to look at Adobe Spark and then post your findings on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, on TikTok, and show educators why they need to use Adobe Spark in the 2021-22 school year. Because I'd love to see more Adobe Spark out there. So now, Kyle, so there's a lot of great videos that are out there, a lot of video created. We talked about Camtasia and WeVideo and Flipgrid and Adobe Spark. I'm going to mention a tool that you don't think of video when you hear this term, but I've been using it more and more during my sessions, during my presentations, that I have to mention it. And it's Padlet. Padlet is a great, great tool. Now, I know they got a little bit of blowback when they changed their model, right? They used to have unlimited Padlets, but limited features. And then a few years back, they changed the model to limited Padlets, but unlimited features. But I'll tell you, I think that was a great move. And I'll tell you why. The features that they have in Padlet are enormous. When you talk about student voice and choice, Padlet is the ultimate tool for that. Because not only can you leave text posts, you can leave audio posts, you can leave video posts, you can leave screencast posts, you can leave drawings, you can leave GIFs, you can do anything that you want. It is so versatile that I cannot speak at how great Padlet has become. So if you were one of those teachers that used to use Padlet because they gave you all the free Padlets and you're like, all I just want is text responses. I'm fine. I'm good. And then they moved over to this other model like, now I can only have three. I don't like it so much. Go back. Go back. Because when you're, again, when you're talking about student voice and choice, Padlet is a great tool to allow that to happen. Kyle, have you seen all the amazing things and updates that Padlet has done? Like even recently in the past month, they redid their entire little dashboard on when you select different options. It's great. I used it today during, I was presenting at ACPE, a great conference up in Oregon's Northwest Territory, to IT administrators, showing how great Padlet is. And we used it. And they were like, I didn't know it did all that stuff. Reintroduce yourself to Padlet, people. Go back and figure it out. It's great. What about you, Kyle? What do you think?
I haven't used it on the teacher side in a while. Not that I was a heavy user of Padlet before the shift to the paid model, whatever. I used it, whatever. But and I remember liking it, but I just there were so many other things that I was doing too. It wasn't necessarily something that I had to have. And that when they went to the paid model, it wasn't like I was indifferent to that because I wasn't using a lot. But I was participating in some professional development earlier this week where the presenters were using a lot of Padlet and a lot of Flipgrid during it. So in the Flipgrid part, that to me was a no-brainer. I'm like, yeah, I know how to use this. This is awesome. This is easy. But I started looking into Padlet and I'm like, I remember it before as being just, again, you could add some text, you could add some links, you could upload some images in there, you could do a Google search and add some stuff. But now, I mean, it's connected to Giphy, where you can add GIFs in there. It is connected to Unsplash Photos. So, I mean, there are all sorts of things that are connected in Padlet now that is just mind-boggling compared to what it was a couple of years ago. And I'm sure that the correlation between those improvements and the shift to that paid model has a lot to do with each other. Correlation equals causation in this case, I believe. But I'm going to look into this a little bit further over the summer and see just how I could maybe start using that again with math classes, because I mean, just seeing those different changes in it was just, again, mind boggling to me. So I'm going to try to start looking to see what I can start using this for, because that reintroduction over these last few days to Padlet was really starting to spark my interest again.
Yeah, no, it's great. And one of my favorite features is the profanity filter. And I love doing a session and go and talking to teachers, or I do a lot of sessions with college age students as well. And I say, I want you to type in all the dirty words, all of them. Type them in right now. And they'll type them in and it comes up with an emoji, right? Of like a poo emoji or emoji with like the, you know, the symbols across the mouth or just a black, because it'll filter them out. And it's great. And they're like, oh, that's so cathartic. I can type it and send it. And it's filtered out. And so for all of you teachers, like, what if I don't have my digital citizenship game on? What if the kids are just going all cattywampus on me? The profanity filter is great. So teachers, I can't tell you enough. Go and reintroduce yourself to Padlet. It's such a versatile tool for student choice, student voice, all the different modalities to showcase learning. I love the fact they even incorporated a draw feature in there. Great for math teachers. You just prompt them in the Zoom or the classroom and say, hey, what's 2 + 2? Show your work in Padlet. Boom, it pops up. So go back, figure it out. Reintroduce yourself. It's a great, great tool. So I had to bring it up because most people do not think of video when they hear the word Padlet, but using this more and more, it's a great, great video tool.
Well, another great tool that it's funny that we haven't mentioned it because we're on it right now is StreamYard. Now, we're using this to put this out into the world on social media and YouTube while we're doing it, but you don't have to do that in StreamYard. So you can set up recordings in here and just record it and then download the recording later on. And if you're watching us on Facebook or YouTube, you can see that we have these different brandings that are on the screen. Like we have our names as Twitter handles on here. We have this little license plate looking thing that's on here that has our Sons of Technology branding. We've got a little logo, the podcast up in the corner here. So you can create some pretty cool videos in StreamYard using some of this branding. And I know we've shifted to using this for our podcast. Ben and I are using it for Beer EDU. And then I know Melody McAllister from EduMatch Publishing, she uses it to do book chats where she brings people on and interviews them about their books. So a lot of people are making the shift over to StreamYard because it's, again, it's something that's designed more for publishing and putting out into the live stream world, like on Facebook, YouTube. I've got this going on Twitter right now as well. But again, you don't have to publish it on the social media channels. You can just do a simple recording with it and then be able to download the video. Now, there's no editing in here or anything like that. So you're not going to be able to go in like a Camtasia and cut things out and do any editing like that. But if you're looking to do something maybe with students where doing some kind of interview type project or whatever, if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, you can see Joe and I are side by side in here, but I can shift this to where now I can put the focus just on me as I'm talking, or I could put the focus back on Joe and I, or there's all sorts of different ways that you can shift the focus of the video in StreamYard to make it look the way you want it to look. So, again, I just thought that was kind of funny that here we are talking about these video tools. I'm like, wait, we're using a great one right now.
No, and that's true. You know, it's funny because I was actually invited to a session on After School Matters. So it's an after school program for youths in the city of Chicago to showcase different ways that students can lift up their skills and their voices through social media. And so I initially did a session for them last summer on how to showcase your voice through podcasting and the different tools you can use for that. And then they asked me to come back and they go, do you have any ideas? I go, I would love to show them how to do video casting with StreamYard. And so we actually did a whole session yesterday on showcasing how you can use StreamYard to amplify your voice, showed them how you record, showed them how you can broadcast to multiple social medias at one single time, showed them that you can incorporate collaboration by having artists create logos for you. You can have somebody as the engineer, like Kyle, right now you're doubling as the engineer and host. But you can have someone as the engineer who is their only job is not, they're not on camera, but their job is to bring the video and to swap the video and bring everything up in a seamless fashion. And so, yes, StreamYard is a phenomenal, phenomenal tool. And I love the fact that when you're done, it saves the video for 14 days. And so if you want to download the video, you can. If you want to download just the audio, and then upload it to like Anchor or whatever your favorite podcasting hosting platform is, you can do it that way too. And so I was showing this to them and they're like, oh, this saves so much time, so much effort. And yes, there is pay versions of StreamYard, but there's a free version too. And yes, there is it'll force you to keep that StreamYard logo in the corner and it will limit you to 45 minutes or this or that. Yes, free, there's always limits. But as a teacher, as a student, you know, if we don't want to be spending that money, you know what? Those are kind of some of the things that you want to live with at the moment, right? That you can't put a watermark on an audio, right? So you can definitely do your podcast that way, but it's a great way to incorporate audio and video in an amazing, amazing tool. I can't believe I didn't have that on my list, Kyle. That's amazing. We're using it and we didn't even say it.
Yeah. And you know, with that paid version, I pay, well, right now I was able to get a free trial for a year of the pro version, which is normally $20 a month. So, and I can broadcast up to three different social media platforms at one time with this versus one that's on the free version. We got changed the watermark. So instead of the StreamYard watermark, we've got our little Sons of Technology podcast logo for the watermark instead on the video. So, and then I know there's another version above that where I think you can do six different social media platforms. So, I mean, you really can start building a name for yourself if that's what you're looking to do with streaming. But again, it could just be like getting people on together, recording something and using all these cool features, and then either downloading it to edit in some other software and then upload it into YouTube, or do it as the audio version as well. So, and you can do the same thing with Zoom. I mean, Zoom doesn't have like a lot of the features like the branding and whatnot on it, but you can record video in Zoom, and then you can also stream it to either Facebook Live or YouTube on there. So, and I really liked Zoom, and we used it for a very long time with this show and for Sun or for Beer EDU. But what the deal breaker ended up being was when we really wanted to expand into the social medias out there, being able to only stream to one platform at a time was the what was hampering us with Zoom, whereas StreamYard allowed us to do up to three. So right now, again, we're on the Sons of Technology Facebook page, we're on the Sons of Technology YouTube channel, and then I have it going on my personal Twitter account streaming right now. And I just think that's something that's really, there's some really cool options to have using StreamYard.
No, I agree. And I've been trying to explain to educators that, you know, like you've been using Zoom for a long time. And when you go back in the classroom, if you still have those licenses, keep using it, right? Because if you are teaching and you can start a Zoom and broadcast to like YouTube at the same time by sharing your screen, you are allowing your students to have a library of everything you've covered that they can go back asynchronously and listen to again. And we know as educators, students do not learn at the same rate. Some students learn the moment you tell them, oh, I get it. Some need to hear it two or three times. And if you record your lessons and upload it to that YouTube, or if it's automatically streaming to YouTube, they can go back and watch the YouTube channel and they can start getting it. And this is what will help all of our after school programs, right? So right now there's so much money that the state of California is giving away to after school programs to, and I'm just going to say this, and I hate this word, to mitigate learning loss, right? There's so much money being thrown at after school programs to do it, but what is going to change in after school programs, right? Are you going to train the after school proctors the same way you train teachers? Do they have access to your LMS? We don't know. But if you, the teacher, record all of your lessons via your Zoom or via StreamYard, all the after school teacher has to do is, hey, you know what? It looks like you need a little bit extra help in math. How about you go rewatch this lesson from your teacher? Or even better, if you have five math teachers, you know, this other teacher seems to get a lot of great responses when they teach. How about you go and watch this other teacher? They may teach it in a different way, use different words, different way. You may understand it more. Imagine if the entire school is documenting in a library of videos every day throughout the year. That could be an amazing opportunity for students. And all you have to do is hit record. That's it. Nothing else. Record. That is it. Right? Because I hear some teachers go, oh, now you're adding one more thing onto my plate I have to do. No, you just have to hit record. That's it. That's it. That's how video can be powerful. That's how video can amplify, right? Just doing what you did in distance, but do it again in face-to-face and save it. It's great. It'll work.
Now, Joe, we mentioned briefly at the beginning some Chrome extensions in Screencastify and Loom, and I know we're going to talk about those still, but one I wanted to bring up real quick is another web-based screen recorder and with some simple video editing that's involved is one called Screencast-O-Matic. Now, I've maybe used this once. This was a few years ago when I was trying out different ones and eventually settled on Screencastify. But Screencast-O-Matic, if you go to screencastomatic.com, there's also a Chrome extension, I believe, for it where you can, for free, do some screen capture with it. And then, again, you could do some very simple video editing that's with it. And then I know a good friend of mine, Jamie Rawson, she's the author of the foreword to my book. This is her favorite program. She goes onto the website and or the Chrome extension, and she uses this one to do her screencasting video. So, and there's also a free version. There are paid versions of it. There's education pricing for it, or you can do a personal one. So this is another option that's out there. And for this one here, this one is very reasonably priced. So, I mean, you could do it if you pay for a full year up front, you can get it for as little as $1.65 a month with that one. So it's just, it's a really inexpensive option for screencasting if you're looking to get not just screencasting, but also some basic video editing.
Yeah, you know, I would love to also mention a tool that is no longer in existence, but it was the very first tool I ever used with my students back in 2009 to capture their screen, and that is Screen Toaster. Screen Toaster was this tool. It doesn't exist anymore. I don't even know if you go to screentoaster.com what it'll bring up. Right. But it said screen, and then it had like a flat screen going into a toaster. It was weird, but it worked great. And that was the very first way I would have my students do our question of the day. And they had to showcase what they learned through Screen Toaster. And it was great. It was great. Now there's so many great tools that you can do that with. But I have to give Screen Toaster a shout out, because it was my first introduction to screen recording and student a voice all the way back almost 12 years ago. Now, man, we're getting old. But it doesn't exist anymore, but it has a special place in my heart. And I cannot look at a toaster without thinking about this tool. So in memory of Screen Toaster, God bless you. Thank you for allowing my students back in 2009 to share their knowledge via video. All right.
I can honestly say I have never heard of that one. So, and I just tried to Google Screen Toaster and I'm not even seeing anything, like not even like a Wikipedia page that shows like Screen Toaster was a screen recording program. I don't even see that. Like the closest thing I'm getting is like Amazon links to buy actual toasters here. So
I wonder if the Wayback
Machine has that. I'm not saying you're making this up, but at the same time though, I'm not finding any evidence on the internet, Joe.
I maybe if you go to the Wayback Machine, they might have something on there. Who knows? Maybe I'm making it up. Maybe it never existed, but I can remember the icon vividly, screen with a picture of a toaster and screens coming out of it like bread. It was a great tool. My students loved it. And so thank you, Screen Toaster, even though you no longer exist and the internet has scrubbed you from existence.
So here's another free one that, I've used before, and there's a whole suite of different screenshot Chrome extensions out there that are free with varying effectiveness. You know, ones like Awesome Screenshot that are out there. But one of them that has not only screenshot capabilities, but also screen recording is one called Nimbus. That's actually a pretty good one as well. So this is a free Chrome extension where you can download it and you can take, it's better, I would say, for screenshots where you can take images of the full screen, scrolling screen, partial screen, so on and so forth. And then you can do some simple annotations with it, but it also has a very simple screen recording part of it as well. And the cool thing about it is that when you take the screenshot or the screen recording, then it gives you the options of where you'd like to save it. You can download it or you can save it into Google Drive or something like that. So that's another one that's out there that if you're looking for just something simple and quick, it's a good little Chrome extension. Again, that's called Nimbus.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Awesome Screenshot. They also have a video recording tool in Awesome Screenshot. And I used to use that all the time for just quick videos, up to 15 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, nothing long. Just for students, while they're taking a screenshot, I would say take a screenshot and then record a reason why you took that screenshot. There has to be a reason you took that screenshot. So give a 30 second kind of little breadcrumb to yourself on why you took that screenshot. And students were like, oh, that's so great, because I take so many screenshots, I can't remember why I took it. Now I have a video of me saying why I did it. So Awesome Screenshots video recording tool is great. But the thing about using that in class is it doesn't download directly to your Google Drive. It doesn't. Which is why the next tool that we're going to talk about right now, Screencastify, to me is the king of all Chrome extensions. Because Screencastify, you log in with your Google account, it connects to your Google account, so every time you record a video, it places it in your Google account. And so all students have to do is record the video, it's placed in there, and then if you want to put it in like a Google slide or an e-binder using Google Sites, it's as simple as insert video from Google Drive, most recent. Boom, it's in. So for that to happen in that quickness of possibility is great. It's fantastic. And Screencastify just, I want to say within the past 2 weeks or past month, they just redid their entire interface when you start recording. So now the interface is clean. You know exactly where your mouse is, your pen is. You can add stickers now, like emojis to the screen as you're going through. You can stop your webcam with an easy button, right? They've just made it so much easier when you're doing the recording. I mean, they've done some really great updates. All of the videos are not only saved to your Google Drive, but also to your Screencastify account online. I said, again, you can trim your videos from the beginning to the end. It's great. I think Screencastify is one of the easiest tools to use. It has some of the lowest of trying to learn how to use it. Good entry point. I think it's a great tool. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, and you know, we've talked about a lot of these screencasting programs and extensions and whatnot, and most of them are ones where if you just need a quick video, you take it, boom, you're done. This one, not only can you take the screenshot or the screencast, but you can annotate as you go. This is the one where you can have the little red halo around your mouse to highlight something. You can blur out parts of your screen. You can darken parts of your screen with it. And so you can zoom in on parts of the screen as you're going. So there's just so many different things that you can do with this screencast that, yeah, and again, it's free, but if you want to do, say, unlimited recordings or something along those lines, there is a small fee you could pay. But I mean, when I say small fee, it's $25 for the year. So it doesn't cost a lot at all in order to get that premium account. And then I believe that there's now that there's some education pricing and perks as well with Screencastify that I'm not sure. I have it on my personal account. I don't have it on my school account.
Yeah, and you know, it just, and they keep adding to it, and it integrates into the Google Suite. I think it's a really great tool. So we could not do a video episode without talking about Screencastify. But Loom, man, let me talk to you about Loom. Now, The one downside about Loom is that it does not automatically upload to your Google account, right? And so to some, that could be a hindrance of an extra step of having to download the video or this or that. So I'm going to get that out of the way right away. But Loom is great for creating an archive of videos that you can share with staff. You can share with students. You can share a folder of videos and say, like, instead of posting it to like YouTube or something, you just post it to this Loom folder and you share that folder out and anybody can watch them. And you get analytics. How many people watched this video? How long did they watch this video? Where in the United or the world did they watch this video? And so it's almost like it's your own little mini YouTube that Loom has created for you. And then Loom also allows you to edit throughout the video. So it doesn't just allow you to trim the beginning or trim the end. You could trim out of the middle. You could trim more. You can edit all the way through. And we even mentioned this at the top of the episode. Loom creates a button in your Gmail that if you needed to send out a quick tutorial to your entire staff or a quick thank you message, but you want to do it face-to-face, even though you can't be face-to-face, all you do is say, create a Gmail, click on that Loom, record the video, and it'll place it right in the video without any need to embed or link or anything at all. So easy. And the more I play with Loom, the more I love it. And just with Screencastify, it limits you to 5 minutes, but nobody wants to listen to you talk more than 5 minutes anyways, except our listeners here. You love listening to us talk and talk.
Right. We're at 55 minutes right now and you're still with us. So, yeah. But at the same time, they're not seeing us along with this. So they're just hearing us unless they're watching on YouTube or Facebook. So now I will say, since our last episode, when we first started talking a little bit about Loom, I've been toying around with it a little bit, and you're right, it's great. So no, it doesn't save automatically into your Google Drive like you would like it to, but Loom.com, you go into your account, every video you make is right there. And like you said, you can create these like rooms or groups or whatever and share it out to people like your own personal YouTube if you like. Now, with the Gmail one, though, I will say this just as a disclaimer right now. I had to get a hold of Loom support about this because with that button that's in Gmail, it gives you the option to either upload your last recording or create a new video. Cool. Click on create a new video, record the video. Then the button that comes up that says insert into message, you click on it and nothing's been happening for me. I've tried it on multiple computers. I've gone into different browsers. Same deal. So I contacted Loom support about this. And it sounds like there's some coding issues on their end. So they're working on it to where they're going to fix that button not working right now. But in the meantime, you can still embed the last video recorded. So if you know that you're writing an email and you want to do a video version of the email as well, go into Loom, record the video real quick, name the video, and then go to your Gmail message, click on the Loom button that's there, and then upload that last video. And boom, it just embeds it right in the email. And it's not just simply a link. You can add the link to it if you want, but it's got the video directly in Gmail to where when the person opens their email account, video is there, they click play and they go. And like you said, I've been a Screencastify guy for a long time. And to anybody from Screencastify listening right now, I'm starting to kind of shift more towards the Loom right now because of just some of these features that they have. So and the ability to edit within the video, not just the ends of the video, that's a great little touch as well. So yeah, Loom is really kind of knocking it out of the park right now. And then on top of that, you can do the free account, and there's some limits on the free account. But if you go in, there's a Google form they have on their website that you put in your school email address and a couple of other pieces of information about what school you work at, so on and so forth, and they'll verify it, and then you get like, you get a premium account for free with Loom by just verifying your education account.
Yeah. And you know, some people are probably listening to this and going, oh man, I got to try out Loom. But Kyle, don't you know, and this is the listener saying it, not me. Kyle, don't you know that in Screencastify, there's an option under the share menu that you can send any video via email. Yes. Yes. We know this, but also we're talking about when you're in the midst of an email. And you are, somebody asks a question or somebody says, hey, how do you do that? And you can click that Loom button and instantly record that. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about you've recorded a video, you go back to the video, you click send to email. That's not what we're talking about. And when you do that in Screencastify, it only puts the link of the video in there. The Loom one, the video is embedded into the email. So all they have to do is click it and watch it. Right, less steps means more likelihood they're going to watch it. So I think you're right, Kyle. I mean, I love Screencastify. I love that it automatically uploads to Google Drive. but Loom is doing some great moves right now. And teachers, I know we get into our camps, right? We get into our Nearpod and Pear Deck camps, right? We get into our quizzes and Kahoot camps. And we have a lot of people that are in StreamYard and Loom camps. But you know what? Camping's fun no matter where you go. So, you know, mix and match your camps a little bit. Open up to see what's happening, because Loom is a great, great tool. So it has a lot of cool things. And Kyle, I have not ran into the issue that you have, but I'm glad to hear that Loom got back to you and said they're working on it. So that's great. Now there's something that we're probably missing, Kyle. Is there any other video or any other formats that we may not have mentioned here?
I'm sure there are out there, but listeners at this point may be a little overwhelmed with all of the different video programs that we've talked about here, but we've got you covered on that. So we're going to have a link in our show notes to a Wakelet collection that's going to have a link to the website for each of these. So where you'll be able to go in and explore these a little bit deeper on your own. So things like WeVideo and Flipgrid and Camtasia, and then there will also be a link in there for the TechSmith site where you can look at Snagit, which is one that we mentioned, but we didn't really go into, where that you could do some simple video on Snagit as well and make GIFs and whatnot. So all of these, whether it's a Chrome extension or a full-on program, we're going to have a link in a Wakelet collection for you so you can check these out on your own.
Yeah, and you know, I know we missed a few. Like, some people are going, Seesaw, you can record in Seesaw. Yes, I've played around with Seesaw. I've seen Seesaw used great in like the K2 system. I've never taught in the K2 system, so I can't with all reality tell you how great the recording in Seesaw is. I can't. It probably is, but I didn't want you to think we missed it, right?
And then you've also got recording options and things like Canvas and Schoology as well. And I've never actually used any of those because I've used all these other programs and I just embed them in things like Canvas instead. So I've never actually used the Canvas recorder. So you may be thinking like, well, what about that one as well? So yes, there's ones out there that we've probably missed. And if there are ones that we did miss, if we get enough of them, maybe we do a little bit of investigating. We do a follow-up episode down the road or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, because even this week when I was doing some research, I found out Kami has a screen recorder, video recorder built into it now. So you can leave little video notes to yourself while you're annotating. So Kami has added a video recorder. And there's a great Chrome extension called Record to Slide, which allows you to, when you install this Chrome extension, it gives you a new button in your Google Slides to allow you to do real quick recordings right in your Google Slide. It's a little bit buggy, which is why I didn't mention it too much out of here, but play around with it, right? It works out well. And so I just want to make sure people know that, yeah, we know about Seesaw, we know about Kami, we know about Record to Slides, but we haven't used them enough to be able to give it the Sons of Technology seal of approval. But we absolutely would love to know what we did miss. How are you using the video in Kami or in Seesaw? Or are you using Record to Slide and you're not having any buggy issues? Was there something we completely did not mention? Were you a Screen Toaster fan and you know what I'm talking about? We want to hear it. So definitely reach out to us on the socials. You know, you can find Kyle, his handle's right there, at Anderson EdTech on Twitter. Mine is JoeMarquez70 on Twitter. You can find Sons of Technology at Sons of Tech EDU on Twitter. Reach out to us. And we also would love for you to record a message on our EdTech Army page. We always love to showcase members and listeners at the beginning of every episode. We kind of paused on that for a while because we know so many teachers and educators are just so bogged down. The last thing you need to do is record a intro video for a podcast, but we're starting it up again. So you'll definitely see how to, in the show notes, how to sign up for that. And you know what? To entice you to do it, if you do record your video on our Flipgrid and we use you on a podcast, all you have to do is in the video, in the description, leave your name and address, and we will send you some Sons of Technology swag right to your house. So record a video, and when we use it, we'll send you swag right to your house. Kyle, any closing remarks before we close out today's episode?
No, I think we did a really great job of covering a lot of great tools here. And I'm excited to kind of dive into a few more of these myself, either ones that I've kind of gotten away from or ones that I just really have never used much before. So I've said this before that we put these episodes out to assist educators around the United States, around Canada, around the world, really. But I get a lot of benefit out of these episodes as well. So just excited to look at some of these things further myself.
No, absolutely. Kyle and I started this podcast, you know, not only to get information out there to the Eduverse, but also just to talk to one another, right? We live so far away. We at least know there's at least twice a month that we get to talk and talk shop. And we always said if one person listens, we're doing our job. But we know we have a lot of members of the EdTech Army out there, and we appreciate you. We appreciate your listenership. We appreciate everything you do for your students in your classroom. And we appreciate you getting the word out that teachers are the most important people in the world at this juncture. And going forward, teachers are going to be hailed as the heroes of this pandemic. So as we return to a new normal, we promise you we will keep bringing you innovative and amazing ideas on how to ditch that fear and keep on keeping on moving forward in the EdTech world for the betterment of our students. So once again, I am Joe Marquez with my amazing, amazing friend, Kyle Anderson, saying, you know what? Just keep on doing what you're doing. You know you're amazing. Just acknowledge it and keep moving forward. Thank you so much, and have yourself a wonderful, wonderful week.